bomb explosion hits a bus in Afghanistan's Mazar-e-Sharif, leaving multiple casualties. Russia reports a drone attack targeting an airfield in the region bordering Ukraine. And in the UK, workers of a housing charity go on strike as part of massive walkouts by private and public employees. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. In Afghanistan, an explosion rocks the capital of the northern province of Balkh, killing seven people. According to police in Mazar-e-Sharif, the bomb was placed in a cart by a local road, and it went off as a bus carrying employees of a petroleum company was passing by. And the blast also wounded six people. There's been no claim of responsibility so far. Afghanistan has been rocked by a number of similar incidents over the past months, some of them claimed by Daesh terrorists. Earlier this month, an explosion at a school in Mazar-e-Sharif claimed the lives of at least 19 people and injured over a dozen others. Our correspondent in Kabul, Rahmatullah Baghban, was with us for more details about this incident.
The bus was carrying the employees of an oil company, and it was targeted by a mine that was planted on the roadside. According to security officials, the explosion has left seven people dead and six others injured. However, eyewitnesses and local reporters say that the casualty is more than what is announced, because what they have reported is 15 people killed and 13 others are injured so far. The Taliban security forces in Mazar-e-Sharif have announced that they are in the area and they are starting an investigation into the attack. As you said, Afghanistan now, in the recent weeks, has been facing waves of deadly attacks. Last Friday, two terrorist incidents occurred in the capital, Kabul. One political leader, Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, was targeted, but he was not hurt. Two bodyguards of him were injured. And another, in another attack in Kabul, Pakistan's Kabul mission was attacked and came under attack.
Now, since the beginning of recent riots in Iran, the country's officials have repeatedly blamed certain Western countries for inciting and fueling the violence. And now a security source says that those Western countries have set out no less than four conditions for renouncing their support for the rioters. The source told Iran's Al Alam news network that the Western countries have demanded that Iran unconditionally injects its oil and gas into the global energy market in the current critical climate. Agreeing to Western positions in the standoff over Iran's nuclear program was another term specified, and two other conditions entailed Iran going along with Saudi Arabia on regional issues and not cooperating with Russia. The riots in Iran broke out after the death of a young woman in custody, Mahsa Amini, in September. She collapsed at a police station in Tehran and died at a hospital days later. Iran says more than 200 people, including security forces, innocent people, as well as rioters, have been killed in the unrest. And following reports of a three-day strike by shopkeepers in Tehran and other cities across Iran, Yusuf Jalali took a tour around the capital to investigate the matter. Here's a report by Yusuf Jalali.
Planned nationwide strikes were supposed to start on Monday across Iran, based on social media posts that have been calling for business owners to roll down their shutters for 3 days. A quick stroll on the streets of Tehran, however, shows that all the fuss is limited to the virtual world.
Life goes on as normal here in this district. I think social media exaggerates the problems. From what I saw today, no one is paying attention to the calls for a strike.
The country has been gripped by street violence for 10 weeks now, with anti-government protests claiming the lives of civilians and security forces. Now the same protesters have called for a 3-day strike.
Sunday belongs to the Islamic Revolution and is a manifestation of the repression exercised by the former Pahlavi regime against our people. So it can't be used to protest against the Islamic establishment. I'm certain that all of the plots hatched to cause trouble to our country are doomed to failure.
Videos circulating on social media show some shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar closed. However, people say some shopkeepers have closed their shops in fear of vandalism by protesters.
Everyone is busy with their businesses today. There are some shops which have been closed, but the majority of them fear possible damage by protesters.
The Islamic Republic says what's happening on social media is not a true reflection of what's actually going on the ground. Over the past days, Iranian officials have been calling for a national dialogue to, quote, stop the enemy fishing in troubled waters. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And now Russia says a fresh drone attack has hit an airfield in a region which borders Ukraine. According to local officials, an oil storage tank was set ablaze due to the attack in the region of Kursk. Fire has reportedly caused no casualties. Incident took place a day after Russia said that Ukraine conducted drone attacks on two military. The Russian Defense Ministry has described Monday's strikes as acts of terrorism aimed at disabling the country's long-range aviation. It says attacks killed 3 military personnel. Now, Moscow says that it responded by launching a massive strike against Ukraine's military control system and other targets. And now let's turn to the United Kingdom, where hundreds of workers at a housing charity have launched an unprecedented 2-week strike, joining other walkouts in the private and public sectors. And more than 600 workers at the charity began industrial action in what their union described as a bitter dispute over pay. Nurses, teachers, lawyers, train workers, and dock workers are among other groups that have gone on strike. They are angry at the cost of living crisis and insufficient pay rises that do not keep up with the inflation rate. Just last week, the National Union of Maritime and Transport Workers said that more than 40,000 workers will stage strikes in December and January, signaling major Christmas disruptions. The UK government is now considering using the military's help to fill in for striking workers ahead of key walkouts by nurses and paramedics. Britain's Labour Party has vowed to abolish the upper chamber of Parliament, or the House of Lords, as part of a constitutional revamp if it wins the general elections in 2025.
Labour will rebuild trust by reforming the centre of government, cleaning up sleaze, nourishing the relationship between central government and the devolved authorities, and replacing the unelected House of Lords with a new, smaller, democratically elected second chamber.
Keir Starmer called the House of Lords indefensible. He said the move was the biggest transfer of power from Westminster to the British people. Now, the blueprint for reform was drafted by former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, but the latest pledge comes as the country is suffering from economic turmoil and a cost of living crisis. The draft is yet to be discussed, and if agreed on, it will be incorporated into the party's election manifesto. The House of Lords includes a mixture of political appointees and hereditary peers, as well as senior bishops. Tens of thousands of people are without electricity in the U.S. state of North Carolina after 2 power substations came under gunfire. A state of emergency has been announced in Moore County. Schools are closed and curfews have been imposed until authorities fix the issues caused by what they're calling an intentional and targeted crime. County Sheriff Ronnie Fields says that the FBI is investigating the incident.
We're looking at all avenues. That's the reason I've got the professionals, the federal folks. They deal with the domestic terrorism more than locals. So they're on board, and they're working with us to determine exactly who done this. Now, I can say this. This individual that done this, it was targeted. It wasn't random. They pulled up, and somebody did, and opened fire on the substation. And same thing at the other one. It was a gate, and they went through the gate and got to the substation and shot it as well.
The local newspaper also reports heavy damage to the infrastructure. Around 36,000 electrical customers in the county were left without power Sunday evening. The energy company responsible for power in the county has warned customers to brace for potential outages that could last for many days. With the Republican Party having won control of the lower house of Congress, the United States legislature appears set to become preoccupied with even more partisan battles. President Joe Biden will now be investigated for an alleged secret deal on oil with Saudi Arabia, with many other politicized inquiries expected to soon follow. Rami Mazahiri has more from Chicago.
The United States House of Representatives has announced an investigation into allegations of a secret deal to boost oil production between the administration of President Joe Biden and Saudi Arabia. Biden is accused of trying to arrange a deal with Riyadh to increase oil production ahead of the U.S. midterm elections last month. Conservative lawmakers say that could represent election manipulation. It's the first official probe announced since the Republicans won control of the House of Representatives. Many other controversial hearings are expected to follow, such as on the handling of the coronavirus, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, corruption allegations involving Biden's son, and others. Just as Democrats forced questionable investigations over the past 2 years, a now divided Congress will likely be preoccupied with partisan issues of often questionable importance to the average person.
In the end of neoliberalism, we're in a kind of age of disorder. And this is kind of the show that is being played out, is that people are just going to be disillusioned from politics entirely. And that's going to open up the potential of polarization, like wider polarization.
Pro-Trump representatives in the House have already introduced articles of impeachment against Biden over the family-related corruption allegations. Many are skeptical that Congress will devote enough time to meeting the widespread economic problems caused by record inflation and Western belligerence towards Russia, China, Iran, and others.
Now, let's still push through the agenda that's necessary to to maintain the super rich are super rich, and that no relief for the working class. And once again, points to the need for the urgency for the foundation for a new party and also ultimately a new system.
An irony is that Riyadh and the OPEC Plus oil production group ultimately ignored Biden's demands for more oil and instead voted to cut production. And despite the cuts, last month Biden still awarded Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman immunity for all cases involving the infamous murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Biden campaigned on holding bin Salman accountable, and his backtracking drew global condemnation. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The Chinese capital has announced an easing of some coronavirus restrictions following days of protests against the government's strict zero-COVID policy. Authorities in Beijing say the people no longer need to show negative tests to enter supermarkets and commercial buildings. However, the restrictions are still in place at many other public venues, including internet cafes and gyms. Strict anti-COVID measures have also been removed in several other cities over the past days. China is now logging a lower number of daily infections, which is attributed to less testing. and the country has been pushing a zero COVID policy since the beginning of the pandemic nearly 3 years ago, but authorities seem to be partially bending the rules amid pressure on the economy and public backlash. A Congolese official has described last week's massacre in the eastern town of Kishishe as a prelude to genocide in the African country.
So the claims from Kigali, the claims particularly from Kagame, that these are armed groups that are killing, while the people that were killed were in an Adventist church. I don't know if there are armed groups in a church, so it's this strategy of selective elimination of a community that's actually not far from what happened in Rwanda, when part of that community had been killed. That's why we are not afraid to say that this is the planning stage for genocide on Congolese soil.
Paluku also said the death toll from the attack has risen now to 272. The government has blamed the massacre on M23 insurgents, saying that they were backed by members of the Rwandan army. However, the rebel group has denied responsibility. The UN's peacekeeping mission in the Congo has called for an investigation. Meanwhile, dozens of activists have held a vigil in the eastern city of Goma to commemorate the victims.
Collective mourning because we are fed up. Since I was born, there's always been insecurity in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I grew up in continuous insecurity, so we are fed up. We want to express our feelings, our emotions, because Kagame and Rwanda have been killing the Democratic Republic of Congo for a long time. The international community closes its mouth when they are killing us.
We find it inadmissible that the international community is passive in the face of the ignoble acts that are perpetrated in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The first person in the world to say neither East nor West was Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. Neither East nor West. In those days, the world's power was split between the US and the Soviet Union. Imam Khomeini said neither this nor that. All the countries in the world had to either be connected to the US or the Soviet Union. They felt they had no other choice. But he said, neither this nor that. This spirit, this logic, this solid and firm word has spread. Today, there are many people in the region who consider themselves to be affiliated with the resistance front. They are ready to resist. They believe in the resistance. They resist, and in many cases, they get results like the outcome that was achieved by the Lebanese because of Hezbollah's efforts in the case of determining the maritime gas field borders.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I talked about three basic lines: the isolation of the United States, the transfer of power to Asia, the expansion of the resistance front, and the logic of the resistance. Indeed, other matters can also be added. They are in my mind, but these things were the more essential issues. So what is Iran's role in this new order? Where will Iran be placed? What position will our dear country hold? This is the thing that you need to think about. This is what you need to prepare yourselves for. This is the things that the Iranians' youth can work on. We can have an outstanding position in this new order. We really can. Why? Because our country has outstanding features that many other countries lack. First of all, we have human resources. We have really good human resources. The intelligence and talent of young Iranians is higher than the average intelligence and talent of the world. This exists. Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Protesters in the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain. They're chanting death to Israel. Their reason, the Israeli President Isaac Herzog was visiting the Persian Gulf island, the first Israeli president visiting Bahrain. The day before, protesters carried signs with Herzog's image that said criminal and you are not welcome in Bahrain. Opposition activists launched a campaign on social media, speaking out against normalization with Israel. But why was Herzog visiting Bahrain in the first place? And why was there such opposition to his visit? As for the reason of his visit, it was at the invitation of King Hamad bin Isa al-Khalifa. It is reported that he will meet with members of the local Jewish community and senior government officials. He will also lead a group of Israeli business people to meet with the Bahraini Economic Development Board. But these things could be done by other officials from Israel. It wouldn't need the Israeli president to make a trip to Bahrain for that, unless there are other reasons for the visit. For starters, Israel needs to maintain a high-profile presence when it comes to its relationship with Persian Gulf Arab leaders. This is crucial for Israel as part of the so-called normalization process. Israel normalized ties with the UAE and Bahrain in 2020 as part of the U.S.-brokered Abraham Accords. The agreement paved the way for the normalization with Morocco months later. But the U.S.-led process has not taken off quite the way the U.S. and Israel intended to. For although the leaders of Israel and UAE and Bahrain may have gotten closer, the population of these Arab countries have displayed anger and animosity towards Israel, as was evidenced in the World Cup in Qatar. The reason for this amount of anger toward Israel is very clear: Palestine and Palestinians.
What is this?
Israel Channel. You don't like us?
You are not welcome here. There is only Palestine. There is no Israel.
Israel's continued repression and violation of Palestinian rights throughout the decades has been met with some Arab leaders engaging with Israel through the so-called Abraham Accords. For their citizens, this is unacceptable and a betrayal of the Palestinian cause. It appears that the Abraham Accords have become a substitute for improving the lives of Palestinians. Bahrain has been experiencing an uprising since the beginning of 2011, although the island itself has seen government opposition due to the marginalization of the Shia population itself. Since the uprising, which has continued until this day, the government has been relentless in violating the rights on a vast number of issues. Torture, illegal detentions, sham trials, and death sentences are just some of the examples of the repression of the Bahrainis. Yet despite these human rights violations, the West, in particular the U.S. and its allies, have turned a blind eye to these violations, just like they have done when it comes to Saudi Arabia. Bahrain saw the so-called normalization as a way of strengthening its close relations with the U.S. and its position in Washington, especially among the pro-Israel community, in order to bolster American support for Bahrain and deflect criticism of the kingdom's human rights record. Bahrain also hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet and U.S. Naval Forces Central Command. As such, it is well aware that the rights of Bahrainis is being violated, yet the U.S. chooses to do nothing about it. Israel is clearly the biggest beneficiary of the Abraham Accords. Israel's military is deepening its cooperation with the militaries of Bahrain and the UAE under the umbrella of the U.S. This was pretty evident when all four held their first naval exercise last November in the Red Sea. This all comes down to Israel further undercutting regional support for the Palestinians. Let's not forget, an American official who helped broker the Abraham Accords admitted that their entire aim was to isolate the Palestinians, to put them on, quote, an island. He said the plan was that if we get everybody around the Palestinians to recognize Israel, then where does that leave the Palestinians? They will have to come because they are on an island. 2 years after the Abraham Accords were signed, this is what it has brought Palestinians: death, execution style.
The U.S. president said on Thursday that he would be willing to speak to Vladimir Putin if he truly wants to end the war. That was the first time he had expressed willingness to speak with the Russian leader since the beginning of the war in February, around which time he said that he will not be speaking with Putin. He made his comments as he was delivering a speech at a joint White House news conference with French President Emmanuel Macron. Here's what he said about the war in Ukraine and the unrealistic conditions under which he would speak to Putin.
Look, there's one way for this war to end, the rational way. Putin to pull out of Ukraine, number one. But it appears he's not going to do that. But the fact of the matter is, I have no immediate plans to contact Mr. Putin. Mr. Putin is, choose my words very carefully. I'm prepared to speak with Mr. Putin if, in fact, there is an interest in him deciding he's looking for a way to end the war. He hasn't done that yet.
Biden further added, if that's the case, in consultation with my French and my NATO friends, I'll be happy to sit down with Putin to see what he has in mind, as he and Macron vowed long-term support for Ukraine.
The Kremlin took note of Biden's comments and responded through its spokesman, Dmitry Peskov. He said that Putin remains open to negotiations, but he is not going to pull his troops out of Ukraine. Peskov emphasized another unrealistic condition that Biden had set for talking with Putin. That would be the West's refusal to recognize the quote-unquote new territories that Russia annexed during the controversial September referendums. All that said, Peskov was not dismissive of the potentiality of talks between the two superpowers. While outlining Russia's conditions for the talks, he said, "President Putin has been, is, and remains open for contacts for negotiations. Of course, the most preferable way to achieve our interests is through peaceful diplomatic means. While it is difficult to assess both parties' actual willingness to talk, what is objectively true is the fact that President Biden had not expressed any willingness to sit down with Putin with or without the unrealistic conditions he set. Could it be that the very difficult winter ahead of Ukraine and the rest of Europe is making the West reconsider negotiating with Putin?" While President Biden was playing fast and loose with the idea of holding peace talks and simultaneously setting unrealistic prerequisites for it, President Macron expressed a more dovish tone by simply saying, "I will continue to talk to President Putin," as he called for efforts, quote, "to prevent escalation and to achieve concrete results." Macron also stated that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also shown, quote-unquote, real willingness to pursue peace. Elsewhere in Europe, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz spoke with President Putin on the phone and urged the Russian leader to find a diplomatic solution to the war as soon as possible. Scholz also called for the Russian troops to fully withdraw from Ukraine, an unlikely scenario to unfold. Putin told Scholz on the phone that Germany and the entire Western Bloc's approach towards Ukraine was destructive, as he called on Scholz to rethink his approach. It is unclear whether or not Germany, France, or the U.S. would initiate peace talks with Russia, but it seems that, at the very least, they are leaving the option on the table, despite some major disagreements between the two sides on the prerequisites for the talks. Something that was expected to hurt the potentiality of peace talks, but doesn't seem to now, is the price cap that was going to be imposed on Russian oil by the G7, EU, and Australia. They have, in fact, imposed the price cap at $60 per Russian crude oil barrel, but the amount is actually well above what Russian oil is trading for right now. This means that Russian oil will still flow and that the West has not been able to find an alternative source to Russian oil, as Russia is still the major oil provider for the countries setting the price cap. The chair of Russian Lower House's Foreign Affairs Committee, Leonid Slutsky, believes that the price cap will only end up jeopardizing EU's energy security as the world waits to see how Russia will react to the move.
The UN General Assembly has voted in favor of a pro-Palestinian resolution to commemorate the Nakba, or Catastrophe Day, which marks the Israeli regime's claiming existence in 1948. The Assembly adopted the resolution with 90 votes in favor, 30 negative votes, and 47 abstentions. The initiative was sponsored by Egypt, Jordan, Senegal, Tunisia, Yemen, and the Palestinians, and was approved despite the opposition of the US, UK, and Israel, and most European Union countries. 47 states abstained. The UN resolution calls for a, quote, commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, including by organizing a high-level event at the General Assembly Hall in May 2023. The resolution also urges the dissemination of relevant archives and testimonies. Nakba Day, or Day of Catastrophe, falls on May 15 of each year. The date commemorates events that led to the Israeli regime forcibly expelling hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their homes in order to make way for the Israeli settlers 74 years ago.
Regrettably today, in the absence of a just solution, 75 years since the General Assembly's decision to partition historic Palestine with the adoption of Resolution 181 Roman II and the prolongation of Israel's occupation now for over 55 years, the Palestinian people, including the Palestine refugees, continues to experience increasing levels of dispossession displacement, violence, human rights violations, and insecurity.
The General Assembly also adopted other resolutions on the question of Palestine. They called for an immediate halt to settlement activities, land confiscation and home demolitions, the release of prisoners, and an end to arbitrary detentions.
The ongoing expansion of by Israel by the occupying power of illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, and the attendant settler violence, which is also on the rise, need decisive action. These illegal actions constitute grave breaches of international law and are a flagrant obstruction of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination.
Separately, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution regarding the Syrian Golan Heights, which the Israeli regime has been occupying for more than half a century. The resolution has demanded the withdrawal of the regime from that area. It called on Israel to implement the resolutions of the Security Council and to withdraw from the Golan to the line of June 4, 1967. On Thursday, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians during a raid near the city of Jenin in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Before raiding Jenin, Israeli forces attacked the town of Yabad, southwest of Jenin, and killed a 22-year-old man there. This is not an isolated act of violence against Palestinians. Israeli occupation forces have ramped up military activity in the West Bank, killing more Palestinians during the past months. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 200 Palestinians, including more than 50 children in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. That is the highest record of killings since the year 2006.
In 2022, we have witnessed a dangerous escalation in Israeli military raids across the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, leading to the killing and injury of more civilians, including women and children.
And none of the soldiers have been investigated to any of the crimes. This is a clear indication how the policy of the coming Israeli cabinet will be: more killings and more aggression.
Israeli officials have described the security situation in the occupied West Bank as dangerous. They've even suggested that the regime could face another intifada or uprising. Palestinians have vowed to respond against Israel's acts of aggression. On November 23, two separate explosions rocked two bus stations at the entrance of occupied Al-Quds. The blasts were in response to a long period of ongoing Israeli oppression of the Palestinian people. The tensions come as Israel is about to have one of the most extreme right-wing cabinets in the coming weeks. The cabinet, which is headed by Benjamin Netanyahu, is controversial due to the controversial Israeli politicians who have been mired in corruption and controversies. France and the United States are considered longtime allies with lots of cultural commonalities. But when it comes to trade, there are signs that the two longtime allies are heading for a confrontation. The French President Emmanuel Macron is visiting the United States on an official visit to boost ties. But during his trip there, Macron had some tough words directed against Washington for what he described as U.S. protectionism for its own industries. Emmanuel Macron is warning that the newly announced U.S. industrial subsidies could split the West. Macron arrived in Washington on Tuesday for his second state visit to the U.S. since taking office in 2017. French officials say Macron will confront President Joe Biden over the subsidies contained in the Inflation Reduction Act. The controversial act was signed by President Joe Biden back in August, and the Biden administration signed that with the Democratic-controlled Congress in a bid to boost U.S. domestic production and create more jobs there.
To a groundbreaking chips and science law that's going to ensure that technologies and jobs of the future are made here in America. In America. And all this progress is part of our vision and plan and determined effort to get the job done for the American people.
Well, things started really well off with Joe Biden. There was a lot of, you know, handshaking and shoulder rubbing. We're in this together and extremely friendly relations until AUKUS. AUKUS, obviously, was lived in France like a major betrayal. And it was painful, and nobody tried to hide, you know, how feelings were hurt.
France is not the only European nation to complain about the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act. Many European leaders have also complained about the legislative package. They say the package unfairly disadvantages non-American companies and would be a serious blow to their economies. The legislation could potentially be disastrous for car makers, especially in Germany and in France. Berlin and France have warned that if Washington does not scale back, they will introduce countermeasures against the United States. European leaders are mulling over the idea of a Buy European Act, just like the Americans. Germany, which is considered the EU's economic powerhouse, has also supported the French calls for more protection for European businesses and manufacturers. There are now talks of countermeasures similar to the U.S. scheme if Washington refuses to address key concerns. Brussels has made it clear that the U.S. legislation to subsidize its own businesses at the expense of its European partners represents a form of economic protectionism that undermines the rules of the World Trade Organization. The controversial act in the Biden administration comes after 4 years of rocky relations between the U.S. and Europe during the tenure of the former president, Donald Trump.
Well, during the Trump presidency, the European-American, the French-American relation was quite conflictual and difficult because in the White House was a president who didn't believe in alliance, who undermined NATO every step of the way, even talked about, you know, NATO being obsolete and there was, according to him, a need to move on. He stepped out of the climate agreement on climate. He stepped out of the negotiation on the Iran nuclear program. Everybody remembers that Emmanuel Macron tried to soften somehow Donald Trump, and that it didn't work out.
Furthermore, on the U.S.'s discriminatory policies against the EU are seen as particularly harmful at a time when the world faces an economic slowdown because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Ukraine war, and trade bottlenecks. It is now believed that the U.S. is using the war in Ukraine to its own advantage by imposing its will on the EU.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, all trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
أسعد حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
The merits and virtues of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, one of the interesting things that happened during the lifetime of Prophet Muhammad and to one of his Sahaba was that, for example, Ibn Umar, the son of Umar ibn al-Khattab, said that during the lifetime of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, we used to recognize the hypocrites through their hatred of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. Now, imagine that. So they saw people, and if they had hatred of Imam Ali in their hearts, they would be recognized as hypocrites. Now, this is a very telling and alarming thing that we should not have any hatred of any of the infallibles, especially Imam Ali. Of course, we're not saying that the Sunni brothers are like this, but there are some people who are haters of the Ahlul Bayt in general, especially Imam Ali. And these people are actually hypocrites, as testified by the son of the second caliph, Ibn Umar.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, in the beautiful universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, it seems like there is a whole treasure trove of treasure and wisdom and knowledge which truly cannot be explained in its full context. Many times we find that there is so much knowledge that can be acquired from the sayings and the knowledge and the wisdom of Imam Ali alayhi salam that really one is astounded. It is interesting, but Imam Ali himself says that, ask me questions because this chest of mine is the storage of knowledge and it is the knowledge which I have acquired from the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So we find that no matter how much we speak about His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, we find that we can continue to keep on speaking about His Eminence. One of the beautiful characteristics that we find in Imam Ali alayhi salam is this idea of being forgiving and being merciful. Now, one of the places that you would normally think about being forgiving and being merciful is, for example, in the house or with your relations with another individual. But I am pretty sure that you would have not expected to see mercy and forgiveness on the battlefield. As it is commonly said, even though it is incorrect, all is fair in love and war, even though this, as I said, is not a correct statement. But this is what you hear from a lot of people and you hear from a lot of officials. And so here, everything being fair in war, of course, is something that Imam Ali alayhi salam himself has taught us, that this statement is not true. Not everything is fair in war. Now, for example, one of the things that we find at that age, because the wars and the battles that took place weren't like the conventional wars of the modern day where, you know, you can shoot somebody from a couple of hundred yards away and that's it, you've killed the other person. But the battles and the wars in that time were fought hand to hand, you know, person to person, one on one, sword to sword. And so it was quite difficult to kill somebody, and it was quite difficult to not be killed by somebody at the same time. And so you could imagine when you're fighting one-on-one in this kind of a arena and this kind of an environment, of course, it's very scary. There's certain terror that is in your heart. You have to have a certain amount of courage and self-power and self-will and control and these kind of things. But in one of the places where Imam Ali alayhi salam shows his aspect of being merciful and his aspect of forgiving others are in these wars. So for example, in the very famous Battle of Siffin, we find that at one point in time, Amr ibn As, who was the, for all intents and purposes, the commander-in-chief of the army of Muawiyah, he was the chief advisor of Muawiyah, eventually to the point where he became the governor of Egypt on behalf of Muawiyah. And so here what we find is that in the battlefield, when Amr ibn As ends up facing Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he realizes that he is going to very quickly be killed, he unfortunately does a quite humiliating and shameful act, and he begins to take his clothes off. Now, of course, eventually, you know, he had no clothes on, and he started, while he was running, he was taking his clothes off. And so, of course, Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he realized that this individual is taking his clothes off, he turned the other way and he let him escape. Now, what's really interesting here is that it's so beautiful that this aspect of mercy and forgiveness, of course, is something that we should always have at hand. Now, I'm not going to say that in every single situation one must be merciful, because there are times when mercy has to be put aside. And of course, that itself is a long discussion. It takes a lot of variables that are, of course, taken into account. You know, but for example, if somebody does a crime or he steals, at this point in time, it's very difficult to be lenient. Because matter of fact, if you are lenient and you are merciful, there's a very high likelihood that the situation will just continue to become worse, right? So if a group of people are rioting, vandalizing, burning, you know, public and private property, I mean, in that kind of a situation, you can't be lenient, otherwise they'll continue to burn that property. But still, we must always have this idea of mercy and being forgiving and forgivefulness at hand, so that when it is necessary and when it is appropriate, that we learn to forgive others and we learn to be merciful with one another. Of course, one of the beautiful lessons that we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Muawiyah would never have taken that governorship, nor his brother, nor his generation, if people would have listened to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and his messenger. We are sad about it, but we are also blessed with it. Because as sad as the situation is, Allah's victory is guaranteed. إِنَّ فَتَحْنَا لَكَ فَتْحًا مُبِينًا لِيَغْفِرَ لَكَ اللَّهُ مَا تَقَدَّمَ مِنْ ذَنْبِكَ وَمَا تَأَخَّرَ. Allah is saying to the Prophet, success is guaranteed for you. And we will protect every accusation against you which was past and the future. So don't worry. Karbala took place, don't worry. Imam Ali was martyred, don't worry. Our imams were persecuted, don't worry. All our imams, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was met with Walid, who came as a governor in Medina, he says, I threaten you, you give the bay'ah to Yazid. Imam says, do you threaten me? Do you know who I am? We imams have made a covenant with Allah. We have made a covenant to give our lives. قُلِنَا صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَايَ وَمَمَاتِ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. You think we're afraid of you? We're not afraid of you. Imam Hussein says, إِنْ كَانَ دِينُ مُحَمَّدٍ لَمْ يَسْتَقِمْ إِلَّا بِقَتْلِي فَيَا صُيُوفُ خُذِينِي. If this religion of the Holy Prophet cannot stand on its right path except by my death, then all swords come and get me. We are not afraid. Look at today. Who are the most feared people in the world today? Who are the ones who have all the armaments? Who are the ones who have all the tape recorders and the machineries to watch us? They've got infiltrators, they've got spies everywhere. You can't utter a word. Certain words have been made taboo. Don't mention it. There will come a time for us even to do salah will become difficult because it will show our true quality. Who is my close companion who is ready to die? Many, Imam said. Imam, in fact, used to whisper to some people, by the way, Muawiyah will become Khalifa. Muawiyah will be very powerful. And people ask, why did Imam Ali mention that to some people? He was warning them that though you may love me, if you don't have a heart to come near me, don't. Keep aside. Because Muawiyah will grab you tomorrow. And he will torture your whole family, mafia style.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's programme, we'll examine the relationship between Germany's political establishment and the Zionist regime. This relationship extends to Die Linke, that was founded in 2007 as a left-wing alternative to Germany's SPD. But Die Linke's leadership has been very hostile to the concept of justice for the Palestinian people. Rather than being the radical left-wing alternative it claimed to be when it was established, is Die Linke more concerned with maintaining the political status quo in Germany? I'll be talking to experts to find out after this special report by Latifa Abu-Chakra about how Germany has responded to the existence of the Zionist entity.
Germany is hostile territory for Palestine. It is the only place in the world outside Palestine where it is effectively illegal to wave a Palestinian flag. Earlier this year, the Berlin police banned all pro-Palestine demonstrations, including the Nakba commemoration, and a protest at the Israeli murder of Shireen Abu Akleh. But why is Germany so backwards in its attitude to Palestine? The traditional response given is that the Germans are still trying to atone for the Nazi genocide against the Jews. But on the same day that riot police swooped on Neukölln and detained or stopped at least 170 people during the afternoon and evening of Nakba Day, by contrast, neo-Nazi admirers of Hitler's regime were free to meet and fly the German imperial flag. They were left unmolested. So something more fundamental is going on.